Welcome to the Semicolon Podcast. This is a safe place to discuss a variety of topics centered around mental health. I am your host, Ashley McClellan, a social worker who has learned a lot about mental health along the way. I am here to be a voice, to support, and to learn with you all. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Semicolon Podcast. Thank you to everyone that is here listening. This is a very special episode because I have my first guest speaker. I am joined by my amazing friend, Emily. Emily and I met through work, and you know what they say, when you have co-workers and their relationship turn into a friendship, then they become people that you can't live without, and Emily is definitely one of those people. She no longer works at my agency, but when she did, she was the person I was able to go to and vent to about work. We are both in the social work field, and you all know social work can be stressful, so it's like she was there for me. I was there for her, and even outside of work, that remains the same. And I'm just so thankful to still have Emily in my life and to be able to call her my friend. In this episode, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into trauma, depression, and anxiety. Emily is going to share her story on how her trauma contributed to her depression and anxiety. But first, I want Emily to tell you all a little bit about herself.
Oh, that was so flattering. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I am honored, truthfully, to be part of such a wonderful podcast and, you know, with such a wonderful person. You are a phenomenal friend, and I'm truly honored to know you. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
So like Ashley said, I am a social worker. I am newer to the field. I got my bachelor's degree in 2017, followed by my master's in 2018. I truly believe that social work is my calling. I am a caretaker and a lover and a provider for and protector for people. That being said, a huge part of who I am is I am an aunt to 16 little people. Well, not so much little anymore. they range from, you know, like 22 to 2 years old. So there's a lot of them in there. And I am a sister. I am a friend that you know, really speaks to my heart and who I am. I am a woman on a journey to find my purpose and simply do right in the world. So
I really like that. And I feel like that's the same for me right now. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you stated that. So we first want to just open up the episode with some statistics. So I'm going to let Emily give a few statistics to you all.
Okay. So, I'm not going to overwhelm people with statistics or numbers. I know that can be too much for some people. But what I really want people to understand is the prevalence or how common anxiety and depression are. Anxiety is actually the most common mental illness in the U.S. So I believe it's about 18% of the population are challenged with anxiety, but only less than half seek treatment for it. One thing that I don't think people really understand is that anxiety is a normal human function. So we all endure anxiety naturally through something that's called the fight or flight response. And what that means, the fight or flight response is a protective factor that our brain has put into place to help us confront or escape potentially harmful situations. So it's something that protects. It has to do with safety. So like if for any reason we feel unsafe, whether it's physically or emotionally, mentally, any of those type of things, it's something that's triggered in our brain to attempt to protect us. As far as depression goes, that's actually the second most prevalent mental illness in the U.S. at roughly about 7% of the U.S. population. There are several different depressive disorders. It's not a one-size-fits-all diagnosis. I think people think it's very like cookie cutter, like either you're depressed or you're not, and you fit into this box, but it's like a continuum or a spectrum of varying severities. There's a lot of factors that play a role in depression. It can be something that's more prolonged throughout life, or it could be situational. Trauma history plays a huge part in depression, health conditions, substance abuse, personal demographics as far as, age and gender and nationality, things like that, as well as family history. So, family history plays a huge part. Typically, it is hereditary if individuals in your family before you have dealt with it, there's a larger chance that you can deal with it as well. And one piece that I want to include is I think a lot of people think depression and they automatically think, suicidal thoughts or, that type of thing. Yes, that is common, but not everyone becomes suicidal when it comes to depression. So you can still be suffering with a mental illness like this and not have that desire as some people do.
Right. So thank you so much for sharing that and giving that little insight. And just really quickly going back to anxiety, and that's why I like how you pointed out that it is a normal human function. And it's like I mentioned in my like trailer episode, is that we all experience anxiety. It could be something as little as preparing for an exam or someone preparing for a wedding. You're going to get anxiety behind those things. So thank you for pointing that out.
Of course.
And as we all know that trauma can contribute to depression and anxiety, as you all know, in my last episode 2, I talked about my trauma and how it contributes to my depression and anxiety. So Emily, I know during a conversation with you stated that your story has become clear and that you now are able to share your story. So if you don't mind, can you share a little of your story and how trauma contribute to your depression and anxiety?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing that I really want to say is that no one's trauma is comparable to another person's trauma. I think that I tried to downplay the things that I went through or I dealt with because it wasn't quote unquote as bad as other people's trauma, right? But we can't compare ourselves to other people. Everybody's situations and experiences are their own. So once I really accepted that, I did experience trauma and, I'm human because of that. We all experience trauma to, certain degrees. So for me, I think I've had, significant trauma history in childhood as well as my young adult, like mid-20s. For me, the two things that really stand out as a child is, for one, not really having grandparents in my life. I mean, I had living grandparents, but they weren't active participants in my life. I saw other people having loving, caring grandparents, and I knew of my grandparents, but they weren't present in my life on an emotional level. And so I think that contributed significantly to like low self-worth, low self-esteem, thinking I wasn't good enough, because I would see them love and care for cousins and, I was almost felt invisible. So that was a huge factor for me. And also, I think the number one contributor was in my eyes, I basically became an only child at the age of 9. So I do have a large family. I grew up with three older brothers in my household who loved and adored me. I mean, as they continue to do. But by the age of 9, because my brothers were at least 9 years older than me, by the age of 9, I was an only child in my eyes because they all went off to college or the military, whatever outlet that they chose to pursue. Mm-hmm. And so it became a household with, you know, me and my brothers and my parents, and feeling, you know, an overwhelming amount of love and feeling adored to, you know, not that my parents' love wasn't significant, but it was just like a shock. So for me, what I have discovered is a piece of like that abandonment piece. You know, not traditionally what people think of abandonment, like, you know, they didn't choose to, hey, I'm going to leave my sister and affect her in this negative way. It was, you know, they were old enough to grow and continue on their life's journey.
Right.
That contributed significantly to depression and anxiety in childhood, because there was just a huge missing piece from what I, you know, from my heart, where, you know, what I was used to. And I think that not only abandonment, but I say grief, because they were gone for a significant, you know, period of time, several years, where not that they didn't call or write, or, you know, it was just them physically being present. That wasn't often that happened. So I grieved our relationship. I grieved the love that they gave to me regularly. And that then continues into the trauma that I experienced later in life, my mid-20s. Both of my parents actually passed away 9 months apart. So by about 25, I was literally, by definition, an orphan, right? So my father's death was something that my dad had cancer, so we were kind of trying to prepare ourselves for the loss of him, while trying to keep hope at the same time. And my mom actually passed away suddenly prior to my dad, 9 months before my dad passed away. So the kind of jab that loss, you know, hit me with was monumental. It like totally sideswiped us and caught us off guard. So, and then not to mention, a year after my father's passing, I had a baby niece who passed away as well, which was just kind of the last straw, I think, for me and my family. Mm-hmm. In just the amount of loss, the holes in our heart that we had after that. I feel, as far as the depression goes, that certain instances, like, you know, especially my niece passing was just a huge contributor to it. Just kind of like, it's the last straw. Like, I can't keep it together anymore. I'm supposed to function. I'm supposed to, you know, work and take care of myself and keep a roof over my head. And I'm just tired and I'm hurting. And it was significantly challenging. And then trying to keep it together and do my best to support, you know, my brother and his family, who had, you know, had this significant loss, and not purposefully trying to downgrade my trauma, but thinking about it, like, you know, how, you know, their loss was so monumental, you know what I mean? Like, how, try in that moment, I kind of tried to downplay what I was feeling, to try and be strong for them and do what I could for them. Right. But again, that goes back to, you know, our traumas aren't comparable. So, and that, so that plays into like the depression, the huge amount of loss, like I said, like literal, like feelings of a hole in my heart, right? And then that add that then comes in anxiety. So for me, I think I deal with a lot of anxiety when it comes to like unknowns. So not knowing how things are going to play out, or not knowing, it's basically a control thing, because I had so little control over all this loss that I felt, that if I don't have control over things, or feel as though I have control over things, I start to get really nervous or anxious, or and not really be able to function as well as I would like to. Mm-hmm. So that's where anxiety kind of comes in for me. And it plays different roles in different situations. So work is one thing, you know, where, you know, control comes in and I want to be able to do everything correctly, or I want to be able to predict my level of success, or how well I'm helping people. And I think, you know, the underlying fear of like, oh, you know, I want to do a good job. I don't want to ever have, like, you know, God forbid, lose my job or something like that.
Right.
Again, going back to the loss, or like, change has a lot to do with it too, is I hate change now, because to me, change is loss. Because that's what I'm used to, is significant changes, is losing something or someone. So, that's a huge part of what I'm working on as an individual, is really working through that anxiety and understanding that, you know, everything isn't in my control. It never will be. All I can do is really focus what is in my control and, go from there.
All right. So I just want to say thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And I just want you to know, as a friend, you are brave. You are an amazing person. Mm-hmm. I admire your strength. And, you know, just from the many conversations we have had, where, you know, you have, you know, told me about the loss of your parents and, you know, family and things like that. It's just like, just to witness your strength, how you know, I know some days can be tough, like it is for all of us, but you continue to get up and tackle this life, because that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, some days it is hard, but just know that, you know, you are an admirable person, and like I said, I'm just so thankful to know someone like you. So again, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Okay, so next, Emily and I are just going to talk a little bit about anxiety and depression symptoms and warning signs. Mm-hmm. For me, I know my biggest symptoms is like what I tell my friends they should look out for, is like, I will go completely ghost, because I want to be left alone. And my biggest thing is like, I don't like burden other people with my problems. And so I, you know, just stay to myself. And then one thing about me is that I'm a crier. Like, I would literally just lay in bed and cry all day. That's just me. And, you know, I remember one time when I was hospitalized, we had like goals group. And one girl, her goal was, you know, not to cry today. And I was like, oh my God, that I like that. Like, I want that to be my goal too. So the person over the group, he was like, why? And I'm like, you just don't understand. Like, I'm tired of crying. I'm like, and sometimes it gives me a headache. But he was like, if that's your way to release whatever is going on, then cry it out. And then he was like, you get a cry. You know? that group was very fun. But I'm like, for me, those are some of my biggest symptoms. Like I said, I will just lay in bed, you know, sad to say, probably I would not even shower that day, because I just can't get out of bed. And like I said, I would just cry. So Emily, do you have any symptoms that stand out for you?
Yes, I can definitely relate to staying in bed. I mean, I could easily sleep, you know, 12 hours, you know, open my eyes and just go back to sleep. either, and I say changes in eating habits, either, you know, I won't eat for periods of time, or I'll emotionally eat. I deal with that, like trying to kind of fill the void of whatever is really bothering me. Very low energy. Like laying in bed, like I don't want to do anything. I don't want to cook. I don't want to clean. Right. I don't, you know, the only thing I can really scrape up the energy for is to get to work so that I can keep a roof over my head. Like, I can relate to the, you know, oh yeah, I'm not going to shower today. Like, that's not what's on my mind.
Right.
If I'm going to be in the house anyways, what does it matter?
Exactly.
And I would add, like, when you said, like, going ghost, like, I come up with any excuse possible to not do things. I mean, not that it's never true, you know what I mean? I do deal with migraines. That's one thing that I deal with that often hinders me from doing things that I love. But there are times where I have said, like, oh, yeah, I have a migraine, when really it's just, like, everything hurts. My brain hurts. Yeah. My heart hurts. All of that. And showing less interest in things that I actually love to do.
Right.
You know, going out with family or any of those type of things. So,
Yeah. So, yeah, going back to the warning signs, like I tell my friends, if you don't hear from me, yeah, that may mean that I'm going through some things. And, you know, I have learned to, like, accept, like, you know, a small text. I'm just checking in. That helps me. But my friends won't know unless I tell them. And then that's my problems. Like, I don't most of the time tell people when I'm going through things. So it's like, they won't know. And then I go a couple of days and not hear from anybody. And I'm just sitting in my room, laying in bed, crying. Don't nobody know, you know? So I am trying to get out of that and start reaching out and letting people, like, hey, I'm having a tough time. You know, I just need to go out with somebody or just hang out just so I could get my mind off things. So I have gotten better with that.
Yeah. I think one thing that I've started to do with people that I'm really close to, and who know about my depression struggles and I know of theirs, is to, you know, I'll check in, you know, just, hey, how's it going? You know, whatever. But then if I have like a vibe, like they just feel a little off, or, you know, they're kind of short with me or whatever, I ask them, you know, what is your mood on a scale from 1 to 10? Like, 1 being terrible, the worst, and 10 being phenomenal. Just so I can really gauge where they're at on, you know, truthfully, because we, as people, we just, oh yeah, I'm good. I'm straight. Right. Like, you know, everything's fine. And that's really not true. It's just something that we say most of the time. So, that's something that I have initiated with people that I'm close to.
I really like that.
Thank you.
Probably got to start using that with some of my friends.
Yes, please.
But
yes.
Yeah, no, I have friends, like one of my friends, Tamika, like she knows me very well. And, you know, she always checks in. She's like, how are you? And I'll be like, and that's like exactly what you said. Like, I'm fine. And she'll just stare at me. And I'm like, what?
You know? Right.
And she's like, I need you to elaborate. Like, don't just tell me that you're fine. So, yeah. So I totally get that, like that. So just to sum up the symptoms and warning signs, I just want to let you all know that symptoms can be physical, emotional, and behavioral. For example, some physical symptoms is like fatigue, you know, probably chest pains, increased sweating. As far as emotional, loss of motivation, like Emily said, losing, you know, interest in, you know, things that you do enjoy, but you just don't have the motivation or interest to do those things. Restlessness, which me and her both share in common, mood instability. And then as far as behavior, unhealthy eating, so you can either overeat or undereat. Some people deal with their, you know, depression, anxiety through drug and alcohol use, nail biting and things like that, constant thoughts, that's definitely me. So, I mean, that goes with anxiety, but when I say my mind races, it races. Like, I just wish I had a switch to just cut off my brain, because sometimes it's so unbearable, and I'm like, really? Like, I could literally go to sleep thinking about a certain situation, and when I wake up, That's the first thing on my mind. Like, it's crazy. So
We got to get you to start meditating.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I'm not preaching.
Now I'm on a journey where I'm trying to figure out what works for me. So Speaking of that, you know, I know you have been trying some things, and I know you recently did some sessions with a self-love coach, and you're also getting into healing crystals. So if you don't mind, can you talk a little bit about those things?
Yes. So I worked with a self-love coach for 6 weeks. One of my wonderful friends introduced me to her. It was a true blessing. She was in like her practicum, her internship period. And so it was free to me, which was a true blessing. So working with her was huge. It continues to be huge because I think about it every single day, the things that I worked through with her, and the things that I really started to understand about myself, that helped me really dive deeper a little bit into the trauma, which I wasn't expecting. But the trauma, the grief, the, you know, all of that played a part into low self-esteem and low self-worth and going back to really trying to love myself first, because I love other people so hard, mm-hmm. but I'm not the greatest at loving myself. Same. And so that was really what was most important for me in working with her. What was great was being a social worker and, you know, having such a large family that I care about so deeply, I often am caring for everybody else. And so the time that I had with her, which was once a week for like an hour, we video chatted, and then she checked in with me throughout the week and gave me some homework and things to kind of reflect on. But that time that we had together was me time. Mm-hmm. Like I live alone. You know, I don't have any children. I have a lot of time alone, but that doesn't mean I really take me time to really reflect and to be one with myself. So having someone to focus on me, I guess, and really like and love me. I almost said love me back. I know I have a lot of people who love me, but I mean, like, really just sit in my pain with me. Mm-hmm. Is what she did for me. Did a lot of validating. She would make a phenomenal social worker. You know, she was really, really great. I will continue services with her if I can. Again, it's an added support. So I do advocate for therapy. I have sought out counseling since my mom's passing, and throughout the years since then. Just because it's literally a time for you, you know, nobody else is as important as you in that moment. Mm-hmm. So, as far as the healing crystals go, I'm kind of new to that, and really learning what it means for me. I grew up in the Catholic Church. So, you know, religion and spirituality is something that, you know, I'm really trying to figure out, where it stands for me and how it resonates with me. So when I found healing crystals, I think I connect very closely with nature. I love doing photography of nature just because it speaks to my soul. So, when I discovered healing crystals and the calmness, mm-hmm. that I receive from them and just like experiencing them and admiring them as a work of art created by God, like that is calming and just a wonderful feeling that I have come to know. So I enjoy, you know, literally going to different crystal shops and just it's the feeling inside of these places for me is just peace. It's calm. And so, you know, even if, because different crystals are supposed to provide different things for people. And right. even if I don't receive certain, you know, exact benefits of whatever this crystal is supposed to do, just the overwhelming amount of calm and peace that I feel in a space like that, or by admiring the work of God, is significant for mm-hmm. me.
And I think that is like the most important. So I'm mm-hmm. glad that you mentioned that. And yeah. Emily and I actually have a crystal date where we are going yes. to go to a crystal shop. And, you know, because she have brought a few crystals. So I definitely want to look into that as well. So I do thank you for sharing about a self-love coach, because that's also something I want to look into mm-hmm. as well. So like I say, when I mentioned that I want this to be a journey of healing, it's like, I want you all to find what works for you. And that's why I want to have people come on and share what may work for them, so you guys could get ideas. And because of Emily, if it wasn't for her, I would never even thought of a self-love coach or looking into healing crystals. So I'm like, we could definitely learn from one another. So Emily, I just want to thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
So I think it is my thing now to end all of my episodes with quotes. If anyone knows me, know I absolutely love quotes. Like, I have them hanging everywhere. Mm-hmm. So this is a self-love quote, and it's by S. McNutt. It's a fall in love with taking care of yourself. Fall in love with the path of deep healing. Fall in love with becoming the best version of yourself, but with patience, with compassion, and respect to your own journey. That really stuck out to me.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
Yes. So, Emily, again, I just want to thank you for being my first official guest. You know, this podcast mean a lot to me. Yeah. And, you know, right off the back, I told you, like, Emily, I have to have you as my first guest. So just thank you for being there for me. Thank you for being a great friend. Thank you for sharing your story. And I'm just so thankful to have you in my life.
Thank you for being a wonderful friend. Thank you for staying true to your journey and really following your heart. I think it's amazing what you're doing, and I love you dearly.
Thank you, and I love you too. I look forward to talking to you all in my next episode.